From Michigan State University, this is Rock and Roll Revisited, celebrating a quarter century of American popular music with your host, Scott Westerman.
This week, one of the most famous urban legends in the history of rock and roll. We'll delve into the life and death of Paul McCartney. That's ahead on Rock and Roll Revisited. The date is October 12, 1969. Abbey Road, the last album that the Beatles would ever record together, was in circulation. And there was an undercurrent of conversation about the band's inevitable breakup.
Here come old flat top, here come grooving up slowly. Got juju eyeball, he want holy roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker, he just do what he please.
Fed up of being sidemen for Paul. After Brian died, that's what happened, began to happen to us.
John Lennon on the breakup.
After Brian died, we collapsed. Paul took over and supposedly led us, you know. But what is leading us when we went round in circles? We broke up then. That was the disintegration, you know.
Greatest rock acts in history was breaking up. And even though John Lennon was clear about the reasons, some fans began to wonder if something else might have been going on.
What happened is that the phone rang one day.
Russ Gibb was on the radio on WKNR-FM in Detroit on October 12, 1969.
And it would ring a lot, and I have a lot of time, so I picked up the phone, and there was some kid.
Oh, it's Tom on the line.
Yeah, hello, Tom. What's going down?
I was
going
to rant with you about McCartney being dead, and what is this all about?
Yeah, well, what school do you go to?
I go to Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan, and you heard that McCartney was dead.
Yeah, that's right.
The caller was Eastern Michigan University student Tom Zarsky.
All I was trying to find out was what was going on. So I make this phone call and I dial up. They put me right through.
I said, look, I hear that every rock and roll guy is dead. They beat their wife or they're taking cocaine. You know, I've heard all the stories. He said, no, no. He said, have you ever? I said, yes, I've heard that everybody's dead in rock and roll.
I was figuring that he was, I really wanted an answer.
One guy that's playing this Revolution number 9 backwards.
Yeah.
And did you hear about that?
No.
And I said, what are you talking about, playing a record backwards? He said, no, try it.
Russ had never heard of this, and I thought he was going to tell me what it meant. He'd never heard of this. And he kept me on the air and kept me on the air.
And I put it on, and it said very clearly, number 9. Number 9. Number 9.
Number 9. Number 9. Number 9.
And when I played it backwards and spun it backwards, it said, at that instant, the phone lit up. I mean, it just, boom.
People who were listening all called the local other media. They called the radio stations and the television stations.
Within 7 minutes, the head of our news department was in saying, what's going on? Our phones are all jammed. I can't get in or out. Everything was going crazy.
At that same moment, University of Michigan student Fred Labor was driving back from Jackson, Michigan to Ann Arbor.
I was driving in my car, and it was Sunday afternoon, October 12th. And I tuned into Russ Gibbs' radio show, and somebody had called in. I didn't hear the initial call, I don't think, but the sense was that something was wrong with Paul.
At that instant, the phone lit up. I mean, it just, boom.
People who were listening all called the local other media. They called the radio stations and the television stations.
People started to bang on the door, and kids were coming to a window. We had a big window, and I could see through the two glasses that we had that there were kids coming around with instants. And then they started to call with other things. Have you played Strawberry Fields Forever? I buried Paul. Well, now I'm freaking out.
And Fred Labor, returning to Ann Arbor, got an idea.
The album Abbey Road came out, and I was working for the newspaper, and it was my assignment to review Abbey Road. So the next morning I got up and went to class, and I came back after my early class, and I had to write this review. So I took my little Beatles albums and set them all up in front of my desk in my little apartment there in front of my typewriter. This would be October 14th, 1969, Tuesday morning, the Michigan Daily. Turn to page 2, and there it is, McCartney dead. New evidence brought to light.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was on the house of
The story begins as a news story. Paul McCartney was killed in an automobile accident in early November 1966 after leaving EMI recording studios, tired, sad, and dejected. That's the lead. And then it says that the Beatles were obviously distraught, and they did not want to disclose this information to the world. So they covered it up, found a lookalike, a guy named William Campbell, and he would take Paul's place in the group, and the clues about this event were then released in the different albums. And then I went through and cataloged a lot of these so-called clues.
WKNR newsman John Small tells us what happened next.
Fred Labor, the writer for the Michigan Daily, the University of Michigan newspaper, had no idea that his record review would turn into a story of international significance.
I was scared. When it first came out, I was like, it took on this worldwide sort of importance. And I was just, you know, this Weisenheimer kid in Michigan, you know, who would cause this. So I was like, whoa. I was not prepared to deal with it.
Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
We dig deeper into the Paul McCartney death rumor. It turns out that the story did not begin in Detroit.
I was studying journalism at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa.
Tim Harper was a student reporter at the Drake University Times Delphic.
I went back early that year to help put together the back-to-school issue of the newspaper. I had been the first one to write about this, and a lot of people mistakenly thought that I started the rumor, that it was me making it up. Not recognizing that I was just writing a story as a journalist.
On a visit to a local music store that still sold vinyl LPs, Fred Labor detailed some of the early clues.
First one of clues, I think, was the Sgt. Pepper with the grave on the front and the flowers in the shape of a bass guitar. And the sense, the whole sense that this is a funeral and the hand over Paul's head.
He's wearing a patch on his left arm that says OPD. This meant he was officially pronounced dead.
Oh, here's another one. The only one with his back turned. Just a coincidence? I don't know.
If we look further back across the sands of time, in May of 1969, we find this interesting piece of evidence. A record entitled simply St. Paul, recorded by former Detroit DJ Terry Knight.
I looked into the sky. Everything was high, higher than it seemed to be to me. Standing by the sea, thinking I was free. Did I hear you call, or was I dreaming then, St. Paul? You knew it all along. Something had gone wrong. They couldn't hear your song of sadness in the air while they were crying out, beware. Flowers and long hair, while you and Sergeant Pepper saw the writing on the wall. You say you want to live your life to the future. They say they've got dues to pay today. You say it's a full of amazing cruel, sir. And if tomorrow I think there's something wrong. It's taken you too long to change the world. Sir Isaac Newton said it had to fall. Here's your call.
got dues to pay today. You say it's a fool who plays it cool, sir. And if tomorrow comes, you know they'll always sit all say. I read the news today, oh boy.
Apple Records made their announcement in early 1968 that they were going to cultivate talent.
Biographer Barry Stoller.
I mean, zillions of people flocked to London to get their piece of the apple pie. And Terry Knight certainly was the kind of guy who would get there pretty early and pretty aggressively. He was there on that fateful evening of, I believe it was August, the end of August 1968, when the Beatles were in the studio.
I told you about the war is a mean man. You know that we're as close as can be, man. Well, here's another clue for you all. The war is with Paul. Standing on the cast iron shore, yeah. Lady Madonna trying to make ends meet, yeah. Looking through a glass onion.
He was up to getting a record contract with Apple Records, but obviously it got canceled. So he goes back, probably really traumatized by not scoring that audition, seeing the Beatles disintegrate before his very eyes, and jotted down a little song. When it first came out in May of 1969, it was published by Storybook, which was Terry Knight's publishing house. Once they heard about this record being issued, they issued a cease and desist order, and something was worked out. And a month later, it's reissued by McLennan. That is Paul McCartney and John Lennon's label.
Within a week of Russ Gibbs' pivotal broadcast on WKNR, the "Is Paul McCartney Dead?" question had encircled the globe, and sales of Beatle records went through the roof. And that wasn't all. Andrew Reeve wrote the definitive book on the subject, "Turn Me On, Dead Man, The Beatles and the Paul McCartney Death Hoax." He reads a selection from the book, describing what went on at other radio stations around the country.
WVBR, an underground FM station in New York, opened up the phone lines for callers with new clues. Richard Price, now a well-regarded screenwriter and novelist, was a college student at the time, and he called in with an original clue. As he recalled for an article for Rolling Stone, February 16, 1984, he told the DJ, quote, "You know what 84% of all coffins in England are made of? It might even be 87%. Norwegian wood." And in Dallas, on the mighty KLIF 1190, DJ Paxton Mills held court with a two-hour examination of the clues. This program was especially notable for its sounder, the jingle used when going in and out of commercial breaks. Over an ominous musical drone, a man with a British accent informed the listening audience that Paxton is alive. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. KLEO, Wichita, Kansas DJ E. Alvin Davis told Rolling Stone magazine, "It's still entertaining. We've got a lot of people talking about it."
Famed attorney F. Lee Bailey brought Gibb, Labor, and others into a television studio for a broadcast that treated the whole affair as a trial, with Bailey cross-examining witnesses and presenting some of the more than 140 clues that had surfaced. The program aired only once, and the videotape is one of the most wanted, lost Paul is Dead artifacts. But one question remained. Was the whole thing planned on purpose? New York disc jockey Alex Bennett, who witnessed the event firsthand from his perch at WMCA Radio, wondered, could this be something that the Beatles had themselves created?
I thought of that for a moment, that maybe, you know, somewhere along the line the Beatles had concocted this thing or told somebody to start spreading the rumor. And I never got any indication of that. I mean, I looked for that. I sincerely wanted to believe that this was some kind of publicity stunt.
The best things in life are free, but you can keep them for the birds and bees. Now give me more.
In 2009, Paul McCartney himself addressed the rumors in an appearance on the David Letterman show.
In the toward the end of the 60s, is that when the rumors about you being dead surfaced? Do you remember that? Do you remember remember how that started? What were your feelings about that?
No, the thing is, you know, I just laughed it off, but it was a little bit strange because people did start looking at me like, is it him or a very good double?
Well, that was the idea. That was the other part of it, that there was a guy who looked like you taking your place.
No, oh, well, this is him.
Yeah.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby.
Golden slumbers fill your eyes, smiles awake you. I will sing a lullaby.
Russ Gibb was also a concert promoter in Detroit. He knew many of the people close to the Beatles personally. The thought of the profitability of perpetuating a hoax of this magnitude had to be music to every Capitol record promoter's ears.
All of a sudden, people were buying two or three albums at a time to play them backwards. Now, that's very hard on a record. You start playing records backwards, you wear them out very rapidly. And of course, that was what got everybody excited in the record industry.
They were all smart guys. They all knew how to get publicity.
Not only Abbey Road were they short of, they're sold out of it. They had to re-release all of their old tunes.
You have to admit, it's one of the great marketing ploys of all time. I mean, if your publicity people could not dream up a better plan where you have to buy all this product and destroy it, pretty much play it backwards and whatnot, to find these clues.
Russ Gibb, Alex Bennett, Tom Czarski, and Fred LaBour. Four of the key players in one of the most fascinating chapters in rock and roll history.
Whatever happened at that little studio, at Keener, that day, has forever changed the story of the Beatles. It's the great Gould story. It's the thing that makes people think. And even today, people buy records and play them backwards.
And Uncle Russ, as he was affectionately known, adds his own mysterious twist to the tale.
There's some things that are best said after we leave the planet. Understand? And so that's basically what it is. There is one piece of information that somebody gave me in London about this whole story. I'm not sure if it's key, but it certainly is important. And I'll let people just guess at what it is until I put it down on paper, and I may never see it. And the Beatles may not even be around, but someday it'll come out.
And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
You're listening to Rock and Roll Revisited. And now let's dig into a few of the musical clues that fueled the Paul McCartney death rumor. As Fred LaBour noted, the notion first popped up with the release of the Sgt. Pepper album. Some said that Ringo's Billy Shearer's character in the title track was in fact a reference to Paul's supposed double, William Campbell. Billy's hero.
Try with a little help from my friend. does it worry you to be alone?
How do I feel by the end of the day?
Are you sad because you're on your own?
No, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends.
Do you need anybody?
I need somebody to love.
Could it be anybody?
I want somebody to love.
Would you believe in a love at first sight?
Yes, I'm certain that it happens all the time.
Do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but I know it's mine. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends.
Do you need anybody?
I just need someone to love.
Could it be?
I want somebody to love. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends. Oh, I get high with a little help from my friends. Yes, I get by with a little help from my friends. With a little help from my friends.
According to Beatle conspiracy theory enthusiasts, the Magical Mystery Tour album is loaded with clues about Paul McCartney's demise. The Fool on the Hill is thought to be William Campbell, doomed to be ignored for, quote, the sound he appears to make, end quote. Or perhaps the fool was Paul himself, who, being dead and buried, lies perfectly still.
Day after day, alone on a hill. The man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him. They can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud, but nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make, and he never seems to notice. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Tell what he wants to do, and he never shows his feelings. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round.
See the world spinning round.
And then there is I Am the Walrus. The song features a sampled recording of a BBC production of Shakespeare's King Lear. The sample passage goes like this. Slave, thou hast slain me. Villain, take my purse. If ever thou wilt thrive, bury my body, and give the letters which you find'st about me to Edmund, Earl of Gloucester. Seek him out upon the English party. Oh, untimely death. Death. And the chanting at the end, when played backwards, supposedly reveals the words, Paul is dead. Another track from the Magical Mystery Tour LP connected with the Paul is Dead conspiracy is Hello Goodbye, which some believe refers to Paul's departure and his double's arrival.
You say yes, I say no. You say stop,
The program is Rock and Roll Revisited, and our review of the Paul is Dead adventure, which gained international attention on October 12, 1969, when WKNR DJ Russ Gibb began to dig into the clues. Earlier in the program, we heard snippets of The Glass Onion and John's The Walrus is Paul comment. Another track from what became known as the White Album is John Lennon's I'm So Tired. Listening closely to the gibberish at the end of the track played backward reveals to some ears the words, Paul is dead, man. Miss him. Miss him.
I'm so tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, 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 I'm so tired, I don't know what to do. I'm so tired, my mind is set on you. I wonder, should I call you? But I know what you would do. And curse Sir Walter Raleigh, he was such a stupid get.
You'd say, wouldn't you want, but it's no joke. It's doing me harm, you know I can't sleep. I can't stop my brain, you know, 3 weeks. I'm going insane, you know, I'd give you everything I've got for little peace of mind. I'd give you everything.
I'm So Tired from the White Album. Of course, there have been hundreds of interpretations of the track Revolution 9, which revealed the backwards phrase, Turn Me On Dead Man. We don't have time to play that track on this program, but with digital recording technology, I encourage you to explore it for yourself to see what you hear. Although it was released after Abbey Road, the Let It Be LP was actually recorded first, and the title track from that collection is said to sound like He Is Dead when played backwards.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see.
Let it be.
night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow, let it be. I wake up to the sound of music. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. Yeah, let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Yeah, let it be. For there will be an answer. Let it be.
Let it be.
Let it be. Let it be.
In the home stretch of our review of the Paul McCartney death conspiracy theory that Russ Gibb helped to propagate on WKNR in October of 1969. And let's return one more time to the White Album and a George Harrison composition that supposedly has George moaning Paul's name near the end. It's unique in the Beatle canon because it's one of the rare tracks where a non-Beatle plays a prominent role. That's Eric Clapton's Slow Hand you hear playing lead on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Surely be learning. We've spent the last hour reviewing one of the strangest stories of the rock era, the notion that Paul McCartney had died at the height of the Beatles' fame. We now can be sure that this was not the case, but it made for some fascinating listening and propelled WKNR DJ Russ Gibb and college students Tom Zarsky and Fred Labor into a brief 15 minutes of international fame. Thanks to the Dutch Public Broadcasting System, Russ Gibb and Keener13.com for providing some of the content for the program. And special gratitude to Andrew Reeve, who wrote Turn Me On Dead Man, The Beatles and the Paul McCartney Death Hoax, available at Amazon.com. You can find a full list of Paula's dead clues on the Keener13.com website. I'm Scott Westerman. Join us next time for more Rock and Roll Revisited.
Revisited is produced at Michigan State University and hosted by Scott Westerman. The executive producer is Steve Schramm. I'm Al Pinter. Join us next time for more Rock and Roll Revisited.